Welcome to the South Platte River Committee of Denver City Council. This session of the South Platte River Committee begins now.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for joining us for the South Platte River Committee on June 25th. I'm Councilwoman Jamie Torres. I'm proud to chair this committee, and I represent West Denver District 3. Before we get into our agenda, let's do a round of introductions, and I'll start with District 2 on my right.
Thank you. I'm Madam Chair Kevin Flynn. Southwest Denver is District 2.
Good afternoon. Flora Alvidres with Lucky District 7.
Good afternoon, Daryl Watson, Fine District 9.
Good afternoon, Chris Hines, Denver's Perfect 10, home with the highest artificial point in Denver.
Goodness gracious.
You're baiting. All right, thank you, council members. We've got three action items today, nothing on consent, two kind of topical areas. So we'll start with and invite Fritz Claussen up for a rezoning application. And welcome Councilwoman Parody, representing the city at large. Okay. Take it away, Fritz.
Thank you so much. My name is Fritz Claussen with Community Planning Development, Associate City Planner. Here to present on 2420 West 14th Avenue, a rezoning request from CMX5 to CMX8. We'll go through the request, the location and context, the process, the review criteria, and staff's recommendation. To summarize the request, the rezoning request to go from the current CMX5 to CMX8. The property is about 0.88 acres, currently surface parking at the intersection of 14th and West 14th and Zunai, sorry. In order to align the zoning across the whole site, we're looking at the Steam on the Platte development. The bulk of the site is already zoned CMX8. And this portion highlighted in here is CMX5. So the request is to solve the split zoning, align the zoning, especially on the southern portion that was previously RTD property. Okay, we're here in Council District 3, represented by Council Member Jamie Torres, in the La Alma Lincoln Park Statistical Neighborhood. Again, the existing zoning is CMX5. Next to an area of CMX8, OSC along the South Platte River, of course, and IAMX5 and IB to the south and east. The property is subject to two view plane restrictions, the Old City Hall view plane and the State Capitol view plane. The zoning requested would fit within both of these. The Old City Hall, as I have calculated it, could be a little bit off, would limit height to 115 feet. State Capitol view plan would limit height to 149 feet. CMX8 has a maximum height of 110 feet or 150 feet with incentives. Current land use is parking. It's adjacent to commercial retail, office, and industrial uses. The top picture is a view of the highlighted in red portion. Behind it, you can see the XL Zunai plant, and the picture to the bottom is looking north. You can see the existing parking lot behind Steam on the Platte. It's located within a floodplain. Current zoning, again, CMX5. Both CMX5 and CMX8 would allow the townhouse, general, and shopfront building forms. Drive-through services and drive-through restaurants would be restricted based on proximity to transit. The property has an agreed-upon affordable housing agreement in place to have 12% of total dwelling units income-restricted at 60% or less area median income with a 99-year covenant. This agreement covers the full Steam on the Platte property, replaces the previous agreement, which just covered the portion that was already zoned CMX8. Okay, we'll look at the process next. The informational notice for this rezoning went out on March 25th. Planning Board notice went out on May 19th, with the Planning Board public hearing taking place on June 4th, receiving a unanimous recommendation. We're here today at the South Platte River Committee, and we are tentatively scheduled for a public hearing on August 4th. There are the areas represented by not only the Denver INC, but also the La Alma Lincoln Park Neighborhood Association and the Sun Valley Community Coalition. We have letters in support from both the La Alma Lincoln Park Neighborhood Association and the Sun Valley Community Coalition. We have not received any comments from members of the public today. Next, the review criteria. Three review criteria, of course, consistency with adopted plans, public interest, and consistency with neighborhood context, zone district, purpose, and intent. There they are in the full text. We'll start with consistency with adopted plans. There are a number of plans that apply here: Comp Plan 2040, Blueprint Denver, the Decatur Federal Station Area Plan, and the La Alma Lincoln Park Neighborhood Plan. Comp Plan 2040 lays out a number of goals for our overall land use strategy up to the year 2040. We want to promote infill development where infrastructure and services are already in place, encourage mixed-use communities, along with quality infill development that is consistent with the surrounding neighborhoods, offering opportunities for increased amenities, and building a network of vibrant mixed-use centers and corridors. In Blueprint Denver, which divides the city up into specific district-based recommendations, this area is considered a special district, basically an industrial area currently. Though that's the primary purpose, or that's what Blueprint sees it as currently, these places can also be mixed use and offer a diverse range of amenities and services to support the area. Specifically, it's identified as an innovation flex area. In these areas, residential uses are compatible, multi-tenant buildings are common, buildings should orient to the street and have pedestrian-friendly features like street-level transparency. It is in the district growth area bucket, which is supposed to see 15% of job growth and 5% of housing growth up to 2040. More on that manufacturing district, Blueprint specifically sees it as a value manufacturing district, Sun Valley area district with both innovation flex and value manufacturing. Further, it's identified as a low value, high threat area. The bullet point there is that Blueprint recommends that, or it sees areas with low value and high threat as areas eligible for conversion, changing to other uses. Equity analysis was done on the property as part of the pre-application phase. We look at improving access to opportunity, reducing vulnerability displacement, and expanding housing and jobs diversity there. I'll go through those individually. Access to opportunity has an average score of 3.89 out of 5, so relatively high access to opportunity. Key negative factors there are higher than average childhood obesity and lower than average access to healthcare services. Vulnerability to involuntary displacement. It's seen as 3 out of 3 vulnerable to involuntary displacement, with a lower than average median household income, lower than average educational attainment, and higher than average percent renter occupied. Now, these are done largely along the lines of statistical neighborhoods, so that covers the entire La Alma Lincoln Park statistical neighborhood. Looking at those a little more specifically, we see Lincoln Park might be experiencing gentrification and displacement with a higher than citywide average rate of change of racial composition and a higher than average, a lower than average percentage of non-Hispanic white population. Corresponding to that, there's a lower than average median household income. Again, this is for the entire Lincoln Park neighborhood, not the specific area we're looking at here, and a higher than average, much higher than average percentage of median household income change. So we are seeing rising there. Population relatively close to average population of the age of 65, but also a significant increase in that. Housing diversity, average score 2 out of 5, so a less housing diverse area with lower than average bedroom counts in homes, lower than average diversity in housing costs, and a lower than average mix of rented and owned homes, meaning more rental than owned homes. Finally, the jobs diversity. There are lower than citywide average retail jobs and innovation jobs. Total jobs in the neighborhood, 5,659 with 12.7 jobs per acre, specializing mainly in manufacturing. Okay, moving on from Blueprint Denver to the Decatur Federal Station Area Plan. Decatur Federal Station Area Plan sees this as a transit-oriented development area and says to encourage a vertical and horizontal mix of land uses that includes multifamily, office, commercial, and public uses, and wants to attract high-quality, mixed-income residential communities. So that means encouraging housing development that meets the needs of families, young professionals, students, and elderly, the whole range, with a variety of residential building forms, including row houses, low, mid, and high-rise multifamily, and live-work. Has a specific height recommendation of up to 12 stories and has language about activating greenways through TOD adjacent to the river, transit-oriented development adjacent to the river, and orienting buildings and entrances along the greenways. Again, this is seen as a transit-oriented development area and is identified as a proposed or existing mixed-income development. Further recommends create a mixed income neighborhood, targeting new multifamily residential development along the river, encouraging development of a variety of residential options, integrating high quality affordable housing with workforce and market rate units. The La Alma Lincoln Park neighborhood plan has similar recommendations, seeing it as a mixed use area with a goal to transition from heavy industrial to mixed use. And to provide business opportunities for local businesses and mixed-use redevelopment, along with that transition from heavy industrial to mixed-use. Again, it's outside the area of more specific recommendations in the La Alma Lincoln Park neighborhood plan. Second, public interest. Where, as far as public interest is concerned, we see, given the need for housing in the city and in the neighborhood, as well as the stated goal to activate the greenways to have more transit-oriented development in this area between two light rail stations, the Decatur Federal Light Rail Station and the Mile High Stadium Light Rail Station. And considering that there is an agreement to provide affordable housing, we see this proposal as being in the public interest. Finally, consistency with neighborhood context, zone district purpose, and intent. Looking at those statements in the Denver Zoning Code, we see this as, you know, consistent, an application of CMX 8 consistent with what the Denver Zoning Code, where it says this district should be. Finally, based on the criteria that we just went over, we recommend that the South Platte River Committee move this application forward for consideration by the full City Council, and happy to discuss or answer any questions you may have at this point.
Thank you so much, Fritz. We have a queue starting, so if you'd like in, just give me a flag. We'll start with Councilwoman Alvidrez.
Thank you, Committee Chair. Thank you for sharing this. Exciting to see potentially more housing, it sounds like, and to see that it is a dirt lot that will become housing, hopefully. I was curious, I saw on the slide about the housing plan, if anybody from HOST is here, why it only goes to 60%, or if there was consideration for less percentage AMI.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm John Colorelli from the Department of Housing Stability. We did not specifically discuss going below 60% AMI. We were tailoring this in respect to an existing affordable housing agreement that was signed in 2020, which restricted 10% of units at 60% AMI. And also we were comparing it to existing EHA standards, which would also require 10% of units at 60% AMI, given what the current projected project plans look like. So 12% at 60% AMI both exceeded what we currently had committed on the site and what the site would be required to provide were they not to enter into this voluntary agreement. And the applicant approached us proactively with this request to do an affordable housing agreement at this time. They're not technically required to at this time, so we were satisfied with an outcome that exceeded what would otherwise be required.
With the CMX 5, would they have been able to do extra stories if they did more affordability?
Yes, they would have if they did a separate freestanding building on that site that was residential.
So the plan is not to do that. It's to combine the different sites. Is that what you're saying?
I should let the applicant yes, speak to what the
okay,
plans
great.
Are. But.
Well, before that, I had one more follow-up question was just, is there anything in the agreement about how many bedrooms there will be, or is there an understanding?
Not specifically.
And then if that's better for the developer too, that's fine.
That's not specifically called out in the agreement, except for the EHA requires a proportional comparison. So all the half the market rate units are two bedrooms, then half the income restricted units will also be two bedrooms, and so on and so forth.
Okay, great. Yeah, I'd love to hear from Susan Powers. I don't know if I'm. Hi,
Susan Powers, president of Urban Ventures. And this is a project we're working with another developer to build this, looking for equity if anybody's interested in investing. So the timing of it isn't exactly clear right this minute, but we worked with them to raise the affordability in the building because that's a commitment we wanted them to make, and they
the number of affordable units.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. So it went from 10% to 12% of the units, and as you said that it is proportional. So if they end up with a lot of three bedroom units, which for this site is probably not going to be the case, they'd have to do the same percentage on the market as they would in the affordable.
Great. I appreciate that. I think I am looking forward to having a housing needs assessment done because I am concerned, and I know you care deeply about our city, so thank you for all the work that you do, just with continuing to build like one bedrooms and studios and what that means for families that are trying to stay in the city. So just peeing that because I know you do care about our city so much, so thank you. That was all I had. Oh, one more question, actually, and this is for CPD. Was there a large, sounds like there was a previous large area plan for this development?
TOD maybe.
For this site, Decatur and Federal?
Yeah. I don't know if that's what you're
Was there a larger plan, or was this part of a large area development plan at all?
Like a large development review process?
Mm-hmm.
That's a good question. I don't think so. No.
And why was that?
I don't believe it's large enough. I think large development review typically starts at 5 acres.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Committee Chair.
Great. Councilman Hines.
Thank you, Committee Chair. Thanks for the presentation. The move to CMX 8 is 110 feet, and then there's a viewplane restriction of like 114 feet, something like that. So you mentioned that with incentives, they could go to 150 feet. But they have no interest in viewplane variance or exemption. So really, they're not asking for incentives. They're saying we're going to give 12%, and it'll be 110 feet. Is that?
That's my understanding. Yes.
Okay. Just making sure. Just because you had mentioned, and I think you were just making sure that everyone knows what the zoning code has.
Yeah.
I care about historic preservation. Our surface parking lots continue to go away. We need to preserve them. I'm kidding. Thank you for taking this surface part
and
making something useful. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. I have a couple questions. Mentioned the 99-year covenant. If I could just confirm, and a head nod is fine. That started when it was in 2020. Was that when the housing agreement was established?
The existing one.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. RNO support, how is this provided? I saw your outreach, but I haven't seen, like, if they provided an email or a letter or anything like that. Yeah, Fritz.
The two letters from the RNOs are included. They're right after the report in the packet.
The staff report?
Yeah.
Got it. Thank you. I'll take a look at that. And just wanted to ask about, you know, we've created the South Platte River Committee because of interest in the interface and interaction with the river itself. So, Sue, I don't know if you have any sense of like the facing of the building and if you're thinking about how it embraces the river as an interface as opposed to Zunai or kind of the other side entrance, I guess.
Yeah, it definitely faces the river. I mean,
yeah.
it has townhome units that are right on, that are facing the river, and then a building above it. So it is intended to be activating the river. We've had conversations because we're in concept review at this point with the SDP about how we can actually build steps down to the river. It's all complicated with the floodplain widening and all that kind of stuff. But that there's a commitment to get the kayaks out from those units and get them in the river. So that's very much the reason we bought the property, and we really want to make it, you know, accessible to the river.
That's super exciting. All right, I thank you for that. I don't have any other questions. If my colleagues don't have others, Michelle, can I get a motion and a second?
Second.
Thank you. Councilman Hines got the second. Thank you very much. We'll see you in council for this one. Thank you, Fritz.
Thank you.
Our next item is the Broadway Denver General Improvement District. So I'd love to invite up, looks like Dennis from Department of Finance and Jamie Gillis representing the JID. If you could join us up here. And we have two action items on this, but one presentation. So I'll let you get settled and introduce yourselves.
Wherever you're comfortable. Yeah.
You're good.
And then I'll drive the slide deck for you. So.
Do you want to do quick introductions?
Of course. So, good afternoon, City Council. My name is Dennis Wojcenik. I'm an analyst for the Capital Planning and Programming team in the Department of Finance. And I'm here with Jamie Gillis, who is representing the Broadway BID.
GID.
GID, I'm sorry. Or I got it mixed up. Perfect. So, yeah, the Broadway GID. So, just jumping into it for the agenda, I have a couple, I have a chunk of slides to go through regarding the council action, the upcoming schedule, and a kind of high-level district overview of some of the conversations and things we've been going over these past several months. And then I will hand it over to Jamie to go into a little more detail about the petition process and kind of the future plans, next steps. And then we will have a Q&A at the end. So we are here today to review two council actions that are related. So the first one is 25-0916, and this is to approve a resolution to set a public hearing before City Council on August 4th, 2025, regarding the formation and establishment of the Broadway Denver General Improvement District. The second item is 25-0917, which is to approve an ordinance concerning the organization and creation of the Broadway Denver General Improvement District, as well as approving the creation of the district, the advisory board, and appointing the initial members to the advisory board, as well as approving the 2025 and 2026 work plans and budgets and making appropriations for 2025 and 26. moving on, so just kind of high level, here's sort of the City Council schedule we have coming up, assuming the public hearing is approved. So we're here today going over this presentation, and then on July 14th would be the vote on the call for a public hearing for August 4th, and then July 28th would be the first reading on the creation ordinance, and then August 4th would be the second reading and public hearing. That's our tentative schedule we have planned. There is some kind of a timing component related to when the city receives the petition. So this schedule is aligned with sort of those timing requirements. So kind of shifting over towards some of the specifics of this proposed district. So the proposed district boundaries, I have a map up here for you to see. So the boundaries are generally described as 6th Ave to the north, the properties on the western edge of Lincoln Boulevard to the east, I-25 to the south, and properties fronting the western side of Broadway up and then up to the alley between Broadway and Acoma. And so just to reiterate the, for that second bullet point, so that does include the properties that are on Lincoln, but only the western side of Lincoln. Additionally, there are some overlapping local maintenance districts. So there are three overlapping local maintenance districts that, and those are the Broadway Pedestrian Mall Phase 2, Broadway Pedestrian Mall A, and Broadway Pedestrian Mall B. And so we've been working on kind of figuring out how these would, upon the GID creation, DADI would request the dissolution of these local maintenance districts, and then there would be plans to address the improvements in those local maintenance districts. And so as for the specific district improvements and services that the Broadway Denver GID is seeking, they can be sort of broken down to four main categories. So there's safety and security, enhanced cleaning, branding, marketing, and programming, and then pedestrian, street, and landscaping improvements. So just kind of running through those a little bit more specifically, one of the main things that the safety and security funding would provide is 24/7 security services, which would just enhance patrols and enable just increased communication with DPD. From the cleaning side, they would be seeking 7-day-a-week cleaning services just to help with picking up trash, streetscape, beautification, just kind of making sure the pedestrian areas and street areas are nice and clean and tidy. The in branding and marketing and programming, there would ultimately just be investment in branding, marketing, and events across the district, and just trying to create a consistent brand identity for the area. And then lastly, like I mentioned, the pedestrian street landscaping improvements. So there would be a dissolution of three local maintenance districts that are, there's some overlap, and there would be plans to address some of those maintenance responsibilities. And so shifting over to the financial plan, so the proposed assessment rate is 8.96 mils on all taxable real and personal property. Because of the timing of this vote and the election, there is then a plan to impose a fee equivalent to 8.96 mils in 2026, which would allow for the activities to begin that year instead of having to wait for the property taxes to be set up after the election. For the property tax collection. So this 8.96 mils would then is estimated to generate a little over $1.1 million in 2026. And so I'll go into a little bit more specific about that budget on another slide. But additionally, the GID proponents intend to seek voter authorization of GID debt at the November election in order to avoid the cost of another election in the future. And so they will not be issued, they will not be permitted to issue any debt until it obtains separate city council authority by separate ordinance. And so, like I mentioned, here's a more detailed breakdown of the proposed budget. So about 50% would be going to safety and security in those 24/7 patrol services and some other smaller expenditures. 30% would go towards cleaning, maintenance, infrastructure, landscaping, and special projects. About 5% would go towards branding, marketing, and programming. 10% for administrative and management services, and then they'd be maintaining about 5% reserves in next year's budget. As for the governance structure of the District Advisory Board, as you may recall, City Council gavels in during the budget hearings to approve the budgets as the board, but there is a District Advisory Board that kind of handles a lot of the regular management of the district and decision making. And so this proposed advisory board would have 11 members. And some of the specific sort of targeted requirements are here on the screen, so I'll just run through those real quick. So they would like at least one member of this board to be an owner of commercial property in the boundaries of the district. They would like one representative from a retail business, another one from a food and beverage business, a representative who is an owner of residential property, and then at least one resident living in the boundaries themselves. Additionally, a city council person representing the majority of the total acreage of the district would sit on the district advisory board, as well as another representative of the Department of Finance. So with that being said, here is a breakdown of the proposed initial district advisory board members. So as you can see, there is a good mix of commercial property owners, business owners, food and beverage owners, residents of the district, as well as Councilmember Alvarez's office and the CFO, Nicole Doheny. And so on that note, I'll kind of hand it over to Jamie to just talk a little bit more about the petition process and kind of what comes next.
Thank you. We launched the petitioning effort for the General Improvement District on April 10th. The effort and conversation to form the General Improvement District has been ongoing for somewhere in the vicinity of 4 to 5 years. And so I got involved with the effort back in December, and we finalized all the plans and officially launched petitioning. We did a lot of engagement. I think we had about a dozen stakeholders, including all the people you saw on the board member list, out door-to-door knocking, both in the residential community and with the businesses along the street. We also did a number of petition signing events at some of the residential complexes where the property managers or owners invited us in, and we would go and kind of explain to the community what was happening, and they could sign the petition there. And we also did a mailer to all the residents. So really tried to get out and do just a lot of direct outreach with the stakeholders throughout the last few months. And we actually submitted our petitions around noon today. So these numbers are slightly out of date, so I'll provide you the updated. We ended up submitting 210 signatures from 210 electors. There are a total of 1,268 electors in the district. So we got close to about 20% of signatures. And the petition signatures roughly still break down to the following that you see on the screen. So we had about 20% from commercial property owners, just over 10% from business personal property owners, about 18% from residential property owners, and then the remaining were from residential renters, not always necessarily renters, registered voters or renters, because in some households, one person's name is on the property and the rest of the family is registered to vote there. So basically just other folks that are registered to vote in the district. Again, this is just sort of a recap, and these numbers are slightly off, but this is a breakdown of the whole of the elector count in the district. So there are 52 business personal property owners in the district. About 40% of them signed. There are 152 commercial property owners. About 30% of them signed. 222 residential property owners, about 15% signed. And then 842 registered voters, about 13% of those, of the total signed.
So I think we can kind of open up to questions.
Great. Thank you all so much. I've got Council Member Alvidres, followed by Council Member Watson.
Awesome. Thank you so much for being here. I'm so excited that we're finally at this point. I know this has been a long time in the works, and it was really important to me to make sure this happened, and I know it wouldn't have gotten to this point if it wasn't for you, Jamie, so I really appreciate you stepping in. And I also want to acknowledge the Broadway merchants who have done so much work, and I was wondering if Luke, you would, if I can ask Luke to come speak on behalf of the Broadway merchants and share why this became a conversation and how this will provide safety, especially when we think about events like the Halloween parade and needing barricades and the underground music showcase, which is coming, and how that leads to a lot of conversations around Broadway and how this will help with those large events that we hold that I think are important to the whole city.
Yeah, thanks. You want to hear
real good? Thanks for having me. The Halloween parade is brings around 30,000 spectators to Broadway every year, and it's sort of perpetually in jeopardy of occurring or not because it's completely funded by sponsorships and donations. So this improvement district would support that, not entirely, but partially. It would provide roughly $25,000 of the $65,000 that the parade needs every year. Underground Music Showcase is increasingly under financial pressure from what we hear. And so in order to make that event continue to happen and or stay on Broadway, we anticipate that there will have to be some monetary support at some point. We don't know what that looks like right now. But the whole idea of the Improvement District started, I took over as president of the Merchants Association in 2020. The association has been around since 2009, long before me, on Broadway. And, you know, cleanliness, safety, and events were the things that I heard from people at every single meeting, and I can't fix any of those things without an improvement district. I'm just a volunteer with no money. So this was the next step former Councilman Joel and Clark and I had lunch one day, and he said, you know, you ought to just try and do some kind of improvement district. And that started the planning in 2020, and we spent many years sort of floundering, trying to figure out what the right mill levy is and what budget works and what can we afford and not afford. And, you know, long story short, here we are. But this is our many years of planning.
I think an additional challenge has been there was some maintenance districts and there's breaks in between them. And that was very confusing for some of the business owners, correct?
That is, yeah. I mean, we have three maintenance districts, and each one of them, as you probably know, has to have a board and a board president and a service provider. And so I think there's a sort of economies of scale by being able to have one service provider for the whole corridor. And I think we've seen that in other improvement districts across the city, like Ballpark, where there was numerous LMDs that were dissolved. So yes, that's a great point.
Thank you, I appreciate it, Luke. I can't say how excited I am that we're at this point. I know it's been a lot of work. I myself have had a lot of conversations with business owners along Broadway and residents along Broadway that are really excited to see this happen and just be able to have a little bit more resources. I think a huge problem that has happened since we removed the dumpsters in Denver is trash. And so trash accumulation is a big thing as we get ready for the Underground Music Showcase. We had, Dottie has had to spend a lot of time out there removing mattresses and couches that end up in alleyways that used to be picked up more often. And so I'm really excited. I think this will be great for the residents, and I can't thank you guys enough for all your work on this. So thank you. Thank you, Deputy Chair.
Thank you, Councilman Watson, followed by Councilwoman Parody.
Thank you so much, Committee Chair, and always, Dennis, thank you for providing these very complex presentations on these maintenance districts and these general improvement districts, coalescing all of the information in a way that community members can understand. And so I appreciate each time that we you come forward to provide those. So thank you so much. And Jamie Gellis, thank you once again also for the work that you've done. It feels like deja vu having this discussion as we were... I was supportive of the work in Ballpark. And so my questions, because of some of the work that community does for the petitioning is amazing, and the door-to-door and all of that targets were great. The election was tough, and my curiosity, and I'm not sure, Jamie, if there's someone else from the administration that can answer this. I know the team that came together for Ballpark had to hold the election themselves. It wasn't done through the clerk and recorder's office. I'm curious if it's premature to ask that question now for this one, or do you know, or does the city know, is this going to be performed by the clerk and recorder, or is this something that it will be an internalized funding mechanism within what's not shown here in the slides for you to pay for a full election? I'm curious if you have that understanding, and I don't mean to jump too far ahead, but it is important because it was a little bit of a surprise for us.
Right. Yeah, so your timing is good to ask the question, actually, because we're working on it. But just so everybody knows, so proponents of forming these districts, like the actual part up to here is not that pricey.
Yeah.
But we do have to hire an outside legal firm to run the elections. Ballpark's election, which was 3,200 electors, cost about $60,000 that stakeholders had to raise. This one is 1,300 electors, so really the cost comes in mailing the ballot, but it's still going to be a lot of money. We have asked the city clerk's office if they can run the election, and there's a nuance in how elector is defined that has created an issue with that. But it would be a huge benefit to all these communities trying to form districts, which in turn provide more tax dollars and more resources to the city, for the city to be able to support that and lower that cost. I will tell you just two things. I actually just yesterday got invited to a meeting of a number of bids that are getting together, and they're looking at legislative changes across the board to bids and JIDs, and this would be one of them. And I know Councilwoman Sawyer, so I'm working with Councilwoman Sawyer on a JID feasibility in Cherry Creek neighborhood, and she has also separately been working on something around that. So I don't know if we could get it fixed in time for this year. I did flag it with the mayor as well as something that kind of prohibits these districts from forming, the cost at the end. But it would require either a legislative change at the state legislature to correct that, or the clerk and recorder finding a way to accommodate the extra work that comes with having to to define and designate electors, essentially, which are different.
Well, thanks for that clarification, Jamie, and know that, I mean, I am very much interested, and I know Councilman Alvidrez, maybe we can have a discussion as to what how we can support having that participation, and then not knowing where you can have, if you have the funding to actually have an election in this day and age, is that is a difficulty on top of the residents and the businesses who want to form these. And so I was very curious if there was an easier, because of the size of your election, if there was an easier process. But know that, please lean on me. I'll raise my hand, and I would love to support you and Sawyer and anyone else that's considering any of this. One other quick question on the board setup. I know we also have, we have a city council member, which I think is a great idea to have on the JID. We also have someone, we're naming Nicole Duhaney. I know one of the difficulties that we had was, especially for executive directors within the city and county of Denver, being on the board and their ability to make that time. Is there a consideration, is there an ask of the Department of Finance to identify a specific person within DOF, not Nicole Duhaney, to be on the board? And Councilmember Alvidrez, that's really up to your decisioning, but it's almost impossible as we list this board, and these are votes on a regular basis, and having someone that can't show up is hard. But I was curious from your perspective, have those discussions began with DOF on identifying an individual if the executive director is not able to attend?
They have not, but in Ballpark, so Ballpark has, Dottie is the agency named, and so they appointed somebody, and that happened shortly after the election that they made that appointment. And we haven't listed it here, but I will also, just so everybody knows, on JIDs, the city also asked that a number of non-voting city agencies be added to, and they it's required that we notify them. And I will tell you, that's the best thing that's ever happened to districts, because we get, I mean, sometimes like the Chief Thomas joins our meetings, we get all sorts of, but all the agencies are there. And so when something comes up, they're like, I'll take that one, I'll go get an answer and come back. And so it's actually, I have promoted to people that having city representation, either voting or non-voting on the board is great. So I assume with Nicole, if she doesn't feel she can handle it, that appointment process will happen shortly after the vote.
Okay. Thank you so much, Jamie. Thank you, David. Thank you, Madam Chair.
And I can jump in real quick and just add a little bit to that, because there have been conversations about this sort of designee question internally. And so, and then additionally, speaking to Jamie's point a little bit further, in the creation ordinance itself, there is language that mentions how Dottie would be one of these invitees, safety would be one of these invitees. Those conversations have been taking place.
That's helpful. Thank you very much.
Okay. Great. Thank you. Councilmember Parody, then Councilman Flynn.
Yeah, I really don't have a question. I just wanted to say that I've had a chance to meet with Luke and others about the JID.
It happens.
And just I'm really grateful for the work. It's like such an obvious part of the city to have one. It's clearly we're doing good work to the districts of an office and to everybody lifting it for all this time. Just happy to get to vote yes. That's all. That's awesome.
Thank you. Councilman Flynn, then Councilman Hines.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dennis, could you tell me, what does 8.96 mils translate to on a typical residential property in the district?
Yeah, Jamie, do you have that handy by chance?
Give me one second.
Luke might have an answer, it looks like.
Oh, yeah, if Luke has that.
Yeah, I'd like to answer.
We've been doing door-to-door for like 2 months, so I've had this question like many hundreds of times. So for a single-family home, we're estimating the cost to be less than $300 a year, so less than a dollar a day. For an apartment, it'd be significantly less. What's that?
Per unit.
Per unit, correct. Yeah, so some of the folks who own large apartment complexes we've interfaced with, because, you know, their bill initially is going to be significant. And after we kind of break it down for them, you know, initially some of them were hesitant, and then we're like, well, have you talked to your residents? What do they think, right? And overwhelmingly, the residents that are renting there are in favor of it. And so then it kind of turns the other way, where the property owner is like, oh, well, you know, this does make sense from this perspective.
I'm sorry.
I just wanted to also add a reminder that most of the properties in the quarter are already paying into an LMD. and so paying into a local maintenance right. district. So this replaces that.
Right.
And in a lot of cases, it's on par with what they were paying, but they're getting a lot more money. Some cases it went down, some cases it went slightly up, but right. That's important to know.
Does that include the residential on Lincoln?
Yes.
Are they part of a local
residential
maintenance
Residential and
district?
Commercial, it's both paying into local
okay.
maintenance.
So there are,
oh, sorry, not on Lincoln, I'm sorry. The maintenance districts that exist are only on Broadway right now.
Okay, so that's what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
The residential on Lincoln will be newly
yes.
added.
Yes.
I'm assuming that you're making sure that you're knocking on all the doors, that they're all aware that their property tax could go up $300 a year.
Yeah, yeah, we have. We walked twice the entire stretch from 6th to I-25 on Lincoln. Every single door got a flyer explaining the costs and, you know, hopefully the benefits. And of that entire walk, we had one person who didn't agree with the concept of an improvement district. And we had maybe half a dozen other people that weren't against the idea. They just weren't sure about it. And for context, 92% of the total budget will be paid for by commercial property owners. So the residential, even though we're saying, okay, you're going to pay, you know, less than a dollar a day or whatever, they're actually getting a service that would otherwise, if they had to do with residential only, would be exorbitantly expensive for them.
That's my next question. What services will, if I lived on Lincoln, what services am I going to get from the district?
Can I say one thing, which is I'm really grateful that Baker and LBCRNO are part of the voting members, and the neighbors on Lincoln have been fighting for this as well, and they helped knock doors, and they've been very supportive because then so to the services that they will get, when your alley is shared with a business, that's where the dumping is occurring, that's where the trash is occurring, and they get a lot of residual effects of any business operations or late night parties. I mean, when a business is open, we've had even raves happening on Broadway. And so they have to deal with a lot to be backing up to Broadway. And so I think that, just so that you know, for your peace of mind, like, the neighbors are very well aware, and Gertie's one of them that lives over there. And so she makes sure everyone knows what's happening over there. I can guarantee that. And they're very excited to be able to have a better quality of life, I think, overall. And the, you know, human feces and other things that you get in those areas, especially after bar closes, are things that they're very excited. The city of Denver and Dottie will never be able to serve these residents in the way that this will be able to. So I just wanted to share that just so that you know the residents are very well aware, and I have had many conversations, and the RNOs are supportive. And so if I've left out anything, I know that was a lot, but if there's anything you want to add.
Right. Broadway, initially this started as a business improvement district, and what we found was that the residents that were aware of the BID that was incoming was like, hey, how do we get in on that too, right? And then it turned into, oh, well, if you have a mattress in your alley and you're a resident, technically you can't call if it's a BID to come get it removed because you're not paying into it, right? If you're paying into it, then you get to call the hotline and say, hey, there's a couch in front of my garage in the alley, come pick it up. So it turned into that too, and power washing the alleys, and there's some tree lawn and right-of-way areas that are they're pretty terrible on Lincoln that we want to improve as well.
Mm-hmm. Dennis, could you explain the, I'm having a little trouble visualizing this, anticipated imposition of 8.96 mil equivalent rate next year. What's the difference between 8.96 mils and the equivalent of that?
Yeah, I'll probably hand it off to Jamie a little bit here in just a second, but fundamentally because of the timing of the election and when the property taxes sort of need to be set up in place for the following year, that creates basically makes it impossible to have funding in place through the traditional property tax mills for next year. And so this is similar to what happened with Ballpark last year, where they imposed a fee to kind of generate revenue in that first year before switching.
So outside of the property tax.
Correct, yes.
So this wouldn't be a tax bill in 2026. It would
be a special assessment.
A fee. Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, that's equivalent to.
But it would be the equivalent of 8.9. Okay.
Yep. Yep. Exactly
it's a different mill rate.
Exactly what we're doing at Ballpark this year, too.
Last question. I'm looking at the map, and I'm wondering, can you talk a little more about why, by the way, it's Lincoln Street, not Lincoln Boulevard. why is the Broadway Marketplace not included in any of this? They front on Broadway.
Up on the near I-25?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So they have a metro district there. Okay. And the metro district imposes, I can't remember the number, 55 mils.
Mm-hmm. So there's nothing on
yeah.
the west side of Broadway at Broadway Marketplace that is not included either in that metro district or
correct.
In this new.
And that's why you get the weird jagged teeth, missing teeth thing on that side because we didn't want to overlap the metro district and metro district overlap. So
they'll get the same services though?
Yep.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Councilman Hines?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I thought since we have the city contact who administers all of our districts, our improvement districts, would you, obviously there's a political question here and I'm not trying to get you to weigh in on the political question, but I thought I'd give you the opportunity if you had any technical thoughts or suggestions, concerns, be a good opportunity for you to share those.
Hi, I'm Brendan Kelly with Dottie. This is, I think it's real fantastic. I think this is great and personally, and I think that the these districts that are out there, I looked today and they go back to, one of them's from 1993, two are from 1998. So, they're legacy kind of districts. And but in the draft of the ordinance that I've read, the GID is agreeing to take on the maintenance of those local public improvements that are in those districts, you know.
Yeah, you said 1993 and 1998?
Two of them for 1998.
Yeah, I really care about historic preservation. I think we should keep those.
I like to
along with the parking lot. Thank you. I just wanted to give you an opportunity. Should there be some technical concerns from the city's perspective on the district? It sounds like you personally and the city doesn't have a concern, and actually, it sounds like there might be an advantage to doing this. Well,
yeah, I can't speak for Dottie leadership, but this is looked at in some ways. I think is like a graduation. Mm-hmm. For an area, and there's been bids created that were once local maintenance districts in Five Points, and we have the ballpark one now, and so.
Great. I don't know. Awesome, thank you. I just wanted to give you that opportunity.
Mm-hmm. I'm president of one of the.
Sir, we need you at a microphone if you're going to speak.
I didn't know if I could just.
Did somebody ask you a question?
I saw you in the corner. I'm sorry.
I'm interested in who you are and what you have.
My name is Rick Carpenter. I'm the president of the Broadway Pedestrian Mall Phase 2 and B. So we're some of the two districts being taken in. A's not here. Brendan, is there anybody here from A? Do you know of?
I didn't see anybody.
Brendan is a board member as well, those two districts. I think this is wonderful as well, to a point. This is something that I've been on the board for 11 years. And I wanted to see happen. We wanted to include north of 2nd to Broadway. That makes good sense. There's a lot of district up there, their property that's not served, that could be served well by a district. Lincoln's a little different story. It's not included now. The numbers don't work. Just so you know, these numbers don't work. You're talking about taking on all of Lincoln from I-25 north to 6th, west side only, which is in complete dismay. There are weeds waist high. One of my questions to people who are proposing this, just 2 weeks ago I think we met, what are you going to do about Lincoln? What are you going to do to bring that up to a standard that can be maintained?
This is a public comment. Nobody.
Councilman Hines asked him a question.
I'm sorry. That's right. It's a public common way.
There will be a public comment hearing.
Okay.
But Councilman Hines asked you a question.
What was the question, Councilman Hines?
Yeah, I just I think you've actually addressed the nature of my question. So I don't want to.
Okay, that's fine.
I don't want to step on your public comment.
I didn't hear your question, or I didn't answer it. I apologize.
You've answered the question that I've asked. Okay. So thank you so much for your time.
Sir, we'll then ask you to keep your public comment reserved for the actual public comment, which will be on the floor.
Okay, that's fine. That's kind of my question today too.
Yeah.
Is there's a lot about this that doesn't work. There's a lot of conversation to have about those two districts that do exist. And the costs of running those. So I'll leave that to public comment. I'd love a larger conversation on it before you move forward. The districts were not included in this planning.
Sir, if you could put that in public comment, that'd be lovely.
When is public comment?
It's August 4th. It's in the slides.
Okay, all right. That's fine.
If it gets out of committee today.
That's a question. But just put that in your head. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Councilman Hines, do you have any other questions?
No, thank you. Thank
okay.
You.
I've got a couple. The map that's included on slide 6, what do the different colors indicate? We didn't have a legend on that one.
That is the different zoning, the different types of zoning. So we should provide a legend to you so you know what that means.
And okay.
You can do that as a follow-up if you'd like.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Because it's hard to see. It's a linear map, so it's hard to blow it up big enough for you to see. But we
okay.
can provide that.
Thank you. In addition to that, I'm curious, I've heard a little bit about how the boundary lines are a little different from the current three local maintenance districts. Can you help me understand how they're different? I understand all of Lincoln is new, but are there other additions or subtractions from the current local maintenance district boundaries?
I brought some maps.
Oh, great. Thank you, Brendan.
Oh, look, these are very nicely color-coded.
Brendan, do you want to speak generally to how they're different for me?
Yeah, I think. Well,
or walk us through what we're looking at here on the map.
Yeah, go ahead and grab a copy, and I'll. So what I don't have are the two overlapped, but.
Do you need this?
Sure. So the GID boundary, if you look at the map I created here, north of 2nd, it goes up to 6th.
Yes.
Right. So there's a distance there. On the south end, they pretty much coincide, I believe. And then on the east, you know, the boundary would extend a little further towards Lincoln. Do you need a copy?
No. You're good.
Grab X is over there.
Okay. And to the east, it extends over to Lincoln for the GID. On the west, they coincide, I believe. Except for the local maintenance district, and I'll go through each one in a moment, but there's a portion of the phase 2 Broadway that extends on to along Alameda to Cherokee. So everything's encompassed except that portion along Alameda, but according to the draft ordinance I've seen, the GID is taking that on.
The GID is taking that on.
That maintenance.
So, yeah, I don't know if you can see the maintenance over there.
Right. And so as we march from north to south for purple, there are the phase 2 Broadway is split. So there's a gap in there. And that district was created in 1993. It could be that those local public improvements were actually put in maybe a decade before. And then as we head south, then we see one that's kind of teal there. That's the Broadway A. At the south east corner of Bayard and Broadway, there's a property that's not in any district. So that's that uncolored piece. That's Broadway A. Then we hit phase 2 Broadway again, and then all the way down to center to Ohio is the Broadway B.
Perfect. Thank you. This is super helpful for me to see how it's changed. Brendan, just as follow-up, just for this is for after this meeting, my own just curiosity. If you can send me like a matrix or a spreadsheet of the local maintenance districts that we have, the JIDs and the BIDs, what they assess in terms of mills and what they bring in, is that possible?
Yeah, and I'd probably work with Department of Finance on
okay. Just but so I can.
You're not. Are you talking about the
picture.
Local maintenance districts too, or because
yeah,
they're not mills? They're
I think I've got
well.
One in my district, so I just want to see, see if they're apples to apples or not. This is just for my
sure.
curiosity.
I can do that.
Okay, thank you for that. One of the things that I heard mentioned, the local maintenance districts, each individually hire their own staff. They have their own boards. They hire their own vendors. So this creates a real efficiency of programming. Does that feel right?
Yes, yes.
Okay, thank you for that. Is the 8.96 mills the same obligation that the local maintenance districts imposed?
It's, so we try to approximate. The local maintenance districts are assessed via a linear front footage assessment.
Yeah.
And so it's not apples to apples when you try to apply a mill, but that's part of, to the point of how do we price it and how do we make it economical and still be able to deliver services. That's part of the thing we look at is across the board, what would that be equivalent to in mills? So 8.96 hits somewhere in the sweet spot where it's kind of on par, same for most people, and a little bit more, a little bit less for some.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I hear the issue around the alley cleanup, which it sounds like why the west side of Lincoln was added, but why not the east side of Acoma on the Broadway, on the...
The east side of Acoma, it goes from Broadway to the alleyway on Acoma.
So it's inclusive of the alley.
Yeah.
Okay. So then why was Lincoln added, I guess, is what I'm wondering.
There was a desire on Lincoln, on that side of Lincoln, to be able to address some of the public realm space and some of the improvements there. So they're more, I think, directly impacted in a lot of ways by some of the commercial uses and things that back right up to them.
Yeah.
And that was part of the conversation with the neighborhood association as well, which has been very actively involved in this whole process, I think, as Lucas mentioned.
Got it.
From start to finish.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Those are all of my questions. Any others from council members at the table?
Oh,
Councilwoman Avidas.
Thank you. I was just looking at the map of included spaces, and I saw that there's a space where some of the Lincoln Broadway RNO members wanted to build a park. So basically that loop up by I-25, down by I-25, I guess. And that's that public space and CDOT space, and that's included.
Yes.
That's great, because I feel like there's a lot of dumping that happens there as well. So I just want to thank you all for including that piece. So thank you so much. That was all I had.
Okay.
Wanted to verify that.
Perfect. Thank you. We've got two items. We can consider them in a block if there are no additional questions. If I can get a motion and a second. Thank you. Moved by Councilman Avidas, seconded by Councilman Hines. I think obviously we've just set the public hearing for August 4th. Any commentary can certainly be emailed to Denver City Council prior to that date. You don't have to wait for that date. And that's to dencc@denvergov.org. So sir, speaking to you. We have no consent items, so we are adjourned. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.